Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Actually, not Lynette this week. Mark Holland filling in for Lynette. Still, though, Leading Edge Medicine brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umat are standing ready to deliver. You guys like to stand when you're on the radio.
I don't like to. I can't sit all that long.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're going to be on the air for a while.
Okay. Part of it is personality. I'm not a sitting person. But the other is, you know, it's one of my old injuries. I had that round that skimmed down my back and blew off about half the right side of my butt. And so there's a large hole there that I usually wear my wallet in. But what'll happen is, well, it evens out the defect. Yeah. You know. But if I sit too long, the leg goes numb because there's less muscle over the nerve.
Right.
So my standing is not so much a virtue, it's defensive against getting a numb leg.
Well, hey, we want to hear from you this morning, your calls, any kind of medical question. I think, Dr. Mixon, you'd probably take on just any kind of question almost.
He does. Now, sometimes the only honest answer I give is, I don't know.
Okay. Talk me
Where
that.
Where the hell did you come up with that one?
I used to be petrified of coming on radio because there's so much I don't know. And he said, well, be honest and say, I don't know.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with not knowing.
That's good.
But what you should always follow it with is, but I'll look it up. Call me back next week.
Yep. That's exactly right.
Well, that number to call is toll-free, 800-465-8770. And we need to hear from people this morning. We're waiting for your calls. But in the meantime, you've done a lot of traveling, I hear.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Are you done with traveling for a bit now?
Yeah, I'm done with traveling for a while. I took an almost three-week vacation, a 20-day vacation with my family through Europe. So we went to Amsterdam and Prague, and then down to Austria and kicked around. But then we got back. I was home for 2 days and got back on an airplane and went to Albany, New York. And I spent the last week, just got home last night again, doing a 90-minute TV special for public TV.
Wow. How come you had to go to New York to film that? We were wondering, because we have PBS stations in Seattle.
We have PBS station here, but apparently the team I was working with, they're from the East Coast.
Oh.
The primary script writer is from New Hampshire, and then the director guy is from Massachusetts, and then another big member of the team is in Tampa, Florida.
Wow.
And so they like there's a station in Albany that they like to work with. And it was a beautiful team. They've got a gorgeous set of studios and control rooms and really a professional, high-quality team. So I was clearly the amateur in that bunch. But they shepherded me through it. They used a great combination of reassurance, flattery, and criticism, to put it all together.
Okay.
So
when are we going to see these TV specials then?
It starts to play right after Thanksgiving break, I guess, early December.
Okay.
We put this together for their December pledge drive where public TV is trying to raise money. And
subject matter will be similar to longevity.
Subject matter is longevity medicine and, you know, what can be done, why it needs to be done. So it's basically an intro into what we do and why we do it. And and then one of the things we give away as a premium if they donate to public TV is my book that I've just finishing up that book.
Great.
And in fact, I thought it was done and I got it off to the editors. And then over the course of the last week, as I'm doing this show, I'm thinking of, well, you know, I ought to add something about this and I ought to add something. So I've got about two more chapters now that this book that I thought was finished, I think I've got about two more chapters I'm going to add to it here over the next week or two.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Well, that's great. You know, medicine is evolving and we're evolving with it.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Yeah.
The problem, of course, is if I keep adding things as I think of them, the book will never get finished. And it'll be, you know, 4,000 pages long.
No. So, people won't read that much. You know that.
I know. And so I'm trying to keep it down between about 250 and 300 pages.
Right.
In that range.
Right. Remember introduction.
Yes, that's right.
And it will be just called what? Longevity Medicine? Or you know what the name of the book is going to be?
Yeah, Lifelong.
Lifelong.
Long, Lifelong. Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier at any age is the subtitle.
Love it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that
I mean, it makes sense, right? That's been our motto, forever and a day.
So I plan to roll the book out coincident with the TV show. Mm-hmm. So it'll all come out early December together.
Okay. We'll
Sounds
look forward
great,
to that.
Jay.
Looking forward to calls today on Leading Edge Medicine. 800-465-8770 is the number to call. Already got a couple of people on the line. Let's go to Ron in Tukwila talking, wants to talk about prostate health. Ron, good morning.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, guys. I got a question for you, Dr. Mixon. I'm an 80-year-old man. Very active, healthy, 6'2", 150. I am BRCA2 positive. I do carry that gene mutation.
All right.
And so I've had a PSMA PET scan, which was negative.
Good.
I've had a multiparametric MRI, which was a PIRADS-3. I had a 18-core biopsy, which showed a tiny, tiny bit of malignancy in only one core.
Okay.
So they've elected to put me on active surveillance, but considering my BRCA2 positive mutation, I know that it's a little different situation than for most men. So my question is, and I have been putting testosterone cream on for about a year, along with the progesterone. I quit doing that the minute I got the positive biopsy. But I'm wondering what in the area of supplements might you add or might you not use if you were a guy in my situation?
Okay. First of all, it should not be necessary to stop the testosterone, all right, as long as you're using it with the progesterone. The chain or the lack of progesterone results in the estrogen alpha receptors in your prostate in trying to immortalize the prostate cells. That's one of the reasons we believe prostate cancer develops in older men, is the low progesterone allows the alpha estrogen receptors to try and immortalize the prostate cells. It would appear that prostate cancer is a threshold hormone-sensitive disease. There's a level, if you castrate a man surgically or chemically and suppress his testosterone completely, two things will happen. One, an androgen-sensitive tumor, which is the vast majority of initial prostate cancers, will slow its growth or almost stop. And so that helps. But if you keep him suppressed, at some point that tumor has a high probability of converting to an androgen insensitive tumor. And those androgen insensitive tumors, the one that don't need testosterone to grow, are the ones that grow the fastest and tend to kill people. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a plus and a minus to that.
Mm-hmm.
The androgen sensitive ones, the ones that do respond to testosterone, any testosterone in your system, including your native amounts without supplementation, are enough to trigger the growth. And once that you've crossed that threshold, it doesn't seem to matter how much additional you have. Okay, so you cross a threshold. Let's say you've got a free testosterone of 40 or 50. That's enough for the tumor to grow. And it doesn't matter whether it's 50 or 150, you get the same amount of stimulation of the tumor. That's the good and bad. You're right. I understand why they put you on active surveillance, because statistically, in a 6 or 7, Gleason 6 or 7 tumor, which yours would certainly be, and probably a Gleason 6, actually.
It is 6, yes.
Yeah. So with a Gleason 6 tumor, your risk of this tumor ever spreading and killing you would be less than 6%. So 94% of the time.
Well,
let me finish it, okay? So statistically, men with a Gleason 6 have less than 6% risk that it's going to spread. The BRCA2, on the other hand, changes that equation. And so we're going to have to watch you very, very carefully, okay? And so, well, lifetime risk is 20 to 60%, but not death.
Correct.
Okay. He's already got the tumor. He's 100% tumor.
Right.
All right. So he's already 100% there. What we're looking for, though, is what is the risk of it becoming a rapidly growing tumor? And that's one I don't have any statistics on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's one that, you know, you're going to have to watch this closely. And I would say, rather than a series of biopsies, I'd want them to do a series of MRIs.
Yeah.
Of your prostate, and watch that thing very closely. If it starts to grow, they need to get pretty aggressive with it. If it turns out to be an indolent tumor, you know, as a non-BRCA2 would be expected to be, then, you know, you're home free. But it is going to take some watching, and I would encourage you to encourage your physicians to stay on top of it with serial MRIs.
And in the meantime, I'm sure you're doing some lifestyle changes to prevent its growth, especially in diet, nutrition, exercise.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Fred Hutz is right on top of this, and we're doing another multiparametric MRI in about a week. So we are.
Oh, okay.
They're staying right on top of this. And your information, Jerry, is just excellent and so right on from what I have been learning on my own. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that brain of yours. My God, how could your head be big enough to hold all that information?
Yeah, it isn't.
So basically, Jerry, what you said was that he could go back on testosterone. He does not need to stop.
He probably could.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if I were his oncologist, I'd probably be nervous. Just because our statistics with non-BRCA2 people would say testosterone is going to make no difference for him with or without it.
Right.
But the data with the BRCA2 is so sparse.
Well, but then is it the gene or is it testosterone?
Well,
right.
and we probably the gene. And actually, the scary thing about the BRCA2 tumors. Sorry, I just got off a plane last night and my tongue is not working yet this morning. The problem with them is an outsized proportion of them are androgen insensitive.
Mm.
They spread fast and grow with or without testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the scariest tumors.
Mm.
And so that's why I'm saying watch it really close, because it may well be that this is an androgen insensitive. So a question for you. With what they did or didn't do. When they did your biopsy and they found a tiny bit of tumor in one core, did they formalin fix that, or were they able to send it for genetic evaluation on that one little bit they found?
That I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at the path report to see if they did anything with that.
Okay. Because, see, if they fixed it with formalin so that they could take their time looking at it, that's going to destroy the genetic material. If it was, if they were able to do a fresh sample so they could actually take that little piece that had cancer in it and do a genetic study, a genome on the tumor itself, that will give you real information about the risks that you're in for the future. Because there are now a whole host of genetic markers that say this tumor is a nasty actor and this one is not. Okay. And so whenever, I mean, if I ever have a prostate cancer, I want them to take and do a genome analysis on the tumor itself, because that's what really matters. The rest of it, we're looking at the odds, you know. I give you statistics. Well, the statistics are what we see when we look at 20,000 people. But when we're dealing with one person, you know, statistics apply to populations, not to individuals. And what I want to know is, what is your particular tumor's risk factor? Not what are the statistics of the tumor's risk factors, okay? And the only way to know that is to evaluate the tumor itself.
Very interesting. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
One or two other things, real fast. I'm sorry. I know he's about to go to the next caller, but
actually to a break.
Okay. But this is, well, okay, we'll take the break. Hang on the line. I'm going to tell you the other things I'm going to recommend for you when we get back.
Call in your questions now for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Umat, Dr. Mixon in studio. The number to call, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Leading Edge Medicine will return in just a few moments. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat in studio, taking your calls at 800-465-8770. Continuing, I think we still have Ron on the phone. Dr. Mixon, you wanted to talk to him a little bit more about this issue.
That's right. Ron, you still there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
So let me tell you what we, you know, what Samara and I were visiting during the break. This putting our heads together, what we came up with. Now, the things I'm going to tell you are based on studies on prostate cancers, but again, the BRCA2 is kind of a special case, and so I don't know that the things I'm going to tell you next will apply to your tumor. They apply to prostate cancers writ large, right? But again, nobody that I know of has done these studies specifically on BRCA2 positive tumors.
BRCA.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, a couple of things. First, I would like to see you on a little bit of a progesterone cream applied to your face and neck each day.
Jerry, I have a question about that.
Yeah.
Transdermal or sublingual? Is there a difference?
Well, again, depends on the levels we're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I can get most guys up at 2 or 3 with the transdermal, but it'll also make him prettier.
Okay, but the sublingual will also get it there.
That's true, but it won't make him prettier.
But they'll sleep better.
That's true. Okay. So, difference of opinion between two doctors here.
Routes of administration.
Routes of administration. Same drug. The question is, do you give it to you sublingually and let you absorb it through the mucous membrane of your tongue?
I would rather they come to Bella Medica to become prettier and then and they sleep better with the sublingual. There you go.
All right. See. And I put mine on transdermally on the face and neck. But the idea is to get your blood level of progesterone up at least to about 2 micrograms. The point is that progesterone affects the estrogen alpha receptors in your prostate to prevent them from trying to immortalize the cells of your prostate. And we think that it's that immortalization triggered by the estrogen receptors that may well predispose you to getting a prostate cancer. The other thing we would do is put you on some of the polyphenol-rich fruits, veggies, and teas. Green tea, the EGCG in green tea, inhibits the growth of most prostate cancers to a significant degree. Mm. Pomegranate juice inhibits the growth of prostate cancers. Lycopene in processed tomato products, you know, like tomato paste and so on, slows the growth of prostate cancers.
Resveratrol?
Oh, resveratrol supplementation, yeah. I'd get you up on about 1,000 milligrams of resveratrol a day. You know, personally, because of my age and a family history, I take three 350 milligram resveratrol capsules per day,
mm-hmm.
Two in the morning and one at night.
Mm-hmm. And then our men's formula has DIM in it?
Diindolylmethane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's a series of things we can give you that will alter your production of cancer promoting products. There's also a prescription I'd like to see you on, and that is tadalafil. And even if it's just 5 milligrams a day, tadalafil is written as a ED drug, but we know that we have studies showing that it cuts the incidence of prostate cancer by 50%. And so, and it slows the growth and spread of a wide variety of solid tumors, including prostate cancers. So since you've got a tumor and our process here is to try to stop its growth or inhibit its growth as much as we can, tadalafil, does this for prostate and breast and, you know, a wide variety of solid tumors. So those would be our recommendations, in addition to, of course, following super, super closely with your oncologist about this.
Appreciate it immensely. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you, Ron.
Good luck.
And that opens up a line for you if you're listening today, 800-465-8770. We have Ken, who's been holding on for a while. Mercer Island. Ken has another question having to do with prostate health. Good morning, Ken.
Hello, Ken.
Good morning. Boy, I wish I was on before the guy before me, because he makes me sound really uninformed. Because I'm just that kind of the front end of this process.
Uh-huh.
I had an elevated PSA, so they sent me in for an MRI, and they found a single, what do you call, well-defined tumor.
Okay.
So I'm due to go in for a biopsy, but frankly, I've heard all kinds of horror stories about infections resulting from the biopsy for prostate. Is there anything I can do to better my risks in that regard?
Okay. Well, first of all, I like the way they're approaching you.
Yeah.
First, they did the MRI. They identified a lesion. The good news is it's a well-defined nodule, so it's not one of these raggedy, looks like it's spreading sort of things. It's, you know, it's got a firm edge. That's a good sign. Okay. Let me give you some reassuring statistics here, just for fun. Okay. And these are drawn from what I refer to as the Detroit study. This is actually done way back in the 90s, 97, 98 sort of region. In the city of Detroit, they, for a couple of years, took every single male of any age who died. And when they did their autopsies, these were mostly suicides, gunshot wounds, you know, that sort of thing. They did a careful stepped section of their prostate. And what they found was kind of fascinating. You might want to put your phone on mute, because you got a lot of background noise. Sounds like you got wind or something going on there. Okay.
Yeah,
that's better. Thank you. People in their 20s had about a 20% of these young men. If you look closely at their prostates, you could find a little nidus of prostate cancer in 20% of men in their 20s. Mm. And in their 30s, it was 30%. In their 40s, it was 40%. In their 50s, it was 50%. And it seemed to go up about 10% per decade, about 1% per year. And by the time you got guys in their 70s, 70% of them had a prostate cancer if you looked closely enough at their prostates. And yet, only about 8% of men will have a clinically significant prostate cancer of any kind. And what that tells us is most of us guys, development of some degree of prostate cancer at some point in our life is almost a given. Okay. Mm. But our immune systems suppress the vast majority of it. And that's where those studies come from, that when, if you find men, when they do a prostate biopsy, if they are Gleason 6 or 7, which is a fairly early form of prostate cancer, if you just watch them, 93% of them will never grow. Their immune systems will keep it in check, and they'll never have a problem. So even when we do find a guy like you who's got a new prostate cancer, if when they biopsy it, they say, no, this is a Gleason 7, 93% of the time it will never give you any grief. That's fascinating, because prostate cancer in men is far more common than we would have believed. You know, if you just take every man and step section them, it's about 10% per decade. Okay? And yet only 8 out of 10 men in the whole world will get a clinically significant prostate cancer. I find that very reassuring. Mm-hmm. So especially when you get somebody like you who has a finding like this, we've probably got a pretty good chance it's not going to do you any harm. It used to be we overtreated prostate cancers. Every man who had a prostate cancer got radiation and surgery and taken off testosterone, and we made their lives miserable. And, you know, the suicide rate tripled because these poor guys had no androgens in their brains. Their lifestyle, we destroyed their lifestyle. So we destroyed their lives, really, treating a tumor that would never bother them. And so in the last 10 years or so, you know, urologists are getting a lot smarter about this. They're now saying, oh, okay, if it's an early tumor, let's not overtreat it. Let's watch it closely. Let's aggressively treat the ones that need aggressive treatment. But not all cancers are the same, okay? Now, the guy who called just before you, he is a special case. He's got a genetic predisposition that gives him up to a 60% of having a prostate cancer in his life, and now indeed he has one. But his cancer may not act the way normal prostate cancers do. Okay, if there's such a thing as a normal cancer. But, so, you know, don't get terribly paranoid about this as yet. You know, I like the fact that they're now, as for your concern about the biopsy, you're right. When you're doing prostate biopsies through the rectum, the bowel, the colon, the rectum is filled with bacteria. It is not a sterile place. And they're going to take a needle, a large bore needle, not a tiny thing, a large core needle, and they're going to stick it through the rectum down into the prostate and suck out a piece of your prostate tissue. And the nice thing is that if they can do the studies that they've done and they can isolate the lesion, they're going after that particular lesion. So the number of holes that they have to punch through your bowel into the prostate are small. This is different from the guys who got just the 12 random punches, where they just punched 12 holes all over the prostate and they say, well, if there's something there's anywhere, we want to find it. Okay. So they've done the right thing. They've isolated a lesion they're going for. That should minimize the number of punctures they have to do. Because every time they punch a hole through that nasty bug-filled bowel into your sterile prostate, there's a risk. Mm. And you know, they're carrying bugs in there with it. And there have been some really nasty infections as a result. The other problem is once in a while they'll hit a blood vessel. They hit a little arterial. And you'll bleed into the prostate, which could cause problems too. So it's not a totally benign process. There are complications. The good news is they're pretty aggressive at trying to clean up that rectum as much as they possibly can. So, you know, they will use iodine solutions and all sorts of stuff that are fairly toxic that will kill as much of the bad bugs as they possibly can before they do the biopsies. But it is impossible to really totally sterilize the rectum. It's just, you know. So there is a modest risk of infection, and they'll watch you closely. And if you run a fever or you have any, you know, increasing pain or you have any evidence of infection, they'll jump on it aggressively with wide spectrum antibiotics and, you know, hopefully bring it under control quickly. So, you know, don't get too paranoid. These guys do a lot of these biopsies. They're pretty darn good at what they do. Mm-hmm. They are specialists. They're not amateurs.
No, I mean, you're doing the right thing. And like Dr. Mixon mentioned, I'm really impressed. And we have seen that transition from a few years ago to now, where they are definitely doing the MRI first, which is the right thing to do.
That's right.
Once you isolate the lesion, then the risk of causing problems with the biopsy are minimized. Now they're going for the lesion, and they want to accurately identify what is the Gleason score in that lesion so that they can then talk to you about management. Right. So hopefully things will be good and you can be watched. And if not, then, you know, they'll present you with what your options are. But a lot of times these days, the options and treatments for prostate cancer are very good, and life expectancy is not compromised unless if it's spread and metastasized.
Right. Yeah, when you get Gleason 8, 9, 10, you've got a problem. Yeah. But if you're a Gleason 6, 7, you know, we're in pretty good, darn good shape these days.
Right, right. And we can come back and talk a little bit about those lifestyle issues we just mentioned again.
Yep.
Okay, Ken, hold on. I think they're going to talk to you more about this as Leading Edge Medicine continues in moments. In studio, Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat taking your questions at 800-465-8770. Leading Edge Medicine will continue in just a few moments.
Race is on, and here comes pride in the backstretch. Heartache going to the inside. My tears are holding back there. I'm trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running. Two love scratch for another saint.
Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, taking your questions at 800-465-8770. I think they want to talk to Ken in Mercer Island just a little bit more.
Yep. Although, that music that you've put together for us, and thank you, by the way.
You bet.
Yeah, I'm going to have you do some others.
Yeah, keep them coming.
I want some march music next.
Some march music.
Okay, I have a suggestion. Okay. You should also do something seasonally so that it changes as the seasons change.
Okay. But see, I was running the other day.
Yeah.
And I run to Sousa. Nothing like a Sousa march to make you want to run.
We want them to listen to the show. We don't want them running around when your show is on, Jerry.
I know, but I want them to wake up, damn it.
They are awake.
Okay, anyway. Yeah, okay, where were we? Oh, yes.
And then prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer.
Yeah.
And go back through our polyphenols and...
Yeah, I mean, remember, exercise is important, Ken, with the diagnosis of cancer.
Oh, God,
remember
it really is.
How important it is for you to make time to take care of yourself.
Yeah, and let me put a finer point on that, okay? And this should apply to the previous caller, too, so hopefully he's still listening. The thing that keeps prostate and breast cancer and colon cancer and all of these cancers under control is our immune system. Our immune system is designed to recognize things that aren't supposed to be in our body and kill them. And so they kill bacteria, they kill viruses, and they kill cancers. When we undergo a mutation, and most of us undergo mutations in our tissues frequently, normal people have regular mutations. We have got something in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 trillion cells, all of which are reproducing, dying and turning over in our bodies on a continued basis. You got 20 trillion things happening. Something's going wrong with some percentage of that 20 trillion.
All right. I mean, it's true. Human birth itself is a miracle.
It is. And so we develop abnormal cells, mutated cells on a regular basis. And most of those mutated cells are not viable, and they'll die on their own. Others are killed by our immune system. Malignancies want to grow and reproduce rapidly, and our immune system's job is to find and kill those cancers before they kill us. That's why the vast majority of prostate cancers don't kill us. That's why only 8% of us even get one, and only 6% of those are nasty actors and get away from our immune system. So anything you can do to boost your immune system is going to help to kill your cancer, or at least to keep it under control. Now, this show that I just did for public TV, the underlying thesis of that is that we have two warring different tissues in our body. We have fat, which is an active destructive gland. Fat cells produce more than 80 different peptides, enzymes, hormones, cytokines, and immune factors that actually promote the growth of cancers and promote our brain cells to die and to cause our arteries to clog up. Working muscle, on the other hand, I used to say had more than 100. The count is now up to 300 different enzymes, peptides, pro-growth, pro-healing, anti-cancer products are produced and released into our bloodstream by working muscle. Not indolent muscle, muscle as it works. Mm-hmm. That's why when a woman gets a breast cancer, if she will then take up an exercise program, she enhances her survival by 25%. Mm-hmm. Okay? The pro-immune response triggered just by exercise cuts her risk of dying by 25%. Okay. That's dramatic. Now, I don't have the numbers for prostate cancer, but this general process, working muscle, helps to kill cancers, period. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell you, get rid of as much fat as you can. Get on a weight loss diet if you're overweight, and get on some muscle building work.
Yeah. Okay. And actually, Dr. Longo has written extensively about fasting for suppressing cancer cells.
Yes.
And so get on an intermittent fasting program. Do his prolonged fasting mimicking diet. do whatever you can. But this is one important thing.
Yeah.
And then there are others.
Yeah.
Who is that reference, Dr. Whose program?
Walter, V-A-L-T-O-R, Longo, L-O-N-G-O.
Okay, there's also studies on on green tea catechins, specifically with prostate cancer. Green tea catechins help kill prostate cancers. There was a delightful study in which they looked at a bunch of guys who had newly diagnosed prostate cancer. They put half of them on high-dose green tea catechins, the ECGC, and they kept them on their high-dose catechins for 3 months, and then everybody had a radical prostatectomy. They went through and took out the entire prostate and looked at it surgically. And what they found was the guys that took the high-dose green tea catechins had one-third smaller prostate cancers after just 2 months on the catechins. So, you know, the green tea is now your new beverage of choice. All right. And I'd love to see you drinking 4 or 5 cups a day. And if you don't like to drink that much green tea, open the tea bags and sprinkle it in your food. Put it in your soup. Put it in your casseroles. Sprinkle it in your salads and make it a crunchy. Your body doesn't know if you steep and get the catechins out from with hot water and then drink it, or if you just eat the whole leaf. Doesn't matter. So get at least 5 big doses of green tea a day into your system somehow. All right. Pomegranate juice is a biggie. And if you like to eat pomegranates, the fiber will do good things for your gut anyway.
Right. Resveratrol.
Oh, yes. My biggie, I take 350 milligram resveratrol capsules per day, 2 in the morning, 1 every evening, because I've got a nasty family history of cancer on both sides of my family. You know, my mother had both breast and colon cancer, and my father had prostate cancer. So, you know.
Lycopene.
Yeah, lycopene is kind of interesting. When we do study on just isolated lycopene, it didn't help the cancer. But lycopene-containing foods, such as tomato paste and so on, do help. So apparently there's something else in those lycopene-containing foods that probably works with the lycopene as a cofactor. So if you look at studies on just lycopene, it doesn't help the cancer. But if you look at lycopene-containing foods such as tomato paste, they do help the cancer.
Right. And then DIM, if you're looking for a supplement, something with D-I-M.
Yes.
Diindolylmethane. Yeah. And then I would also suggest avoiding charred and burned meat.
Absolutely.
No barbecue.
No barbecue for you. Good.
Okay, Ken.
Does that give you some help, Ken?
Very reassuring. Other than the no barbecue, that's very reassuring.
Hard this time of year.
I know.
It is. Thank you very much for your time, doctors.
You're welcome, sir.
Good luck. Yeah, and stay in touch. Let us know how things go.
Okay, that opens up a line at 800-465-8770. Another question, kind of, I think, spawned by an earlier discussion about progesterone cream. We have Tom in Chehalis. Hi, Tom. What's your question for the doctors?
Hello, Tom.
Good morning. My question is progesterone cream utilized as a anti-cancer, as far as anti-prostate cancer, where you apply it to your down in their testicles. And I didn't know if you had talked about that previously. I brought that up years ago, and I remember that you had a compounding pharmacist on, and they were looking into that. But I've been doing that for years, and I was just wondering what you thought about that. And one other thing I wanted to add to that is that just some of the consideration when you talk about these needle biopsies, a concept of what is called, which I would not go with, is called track seeding, in as much as you bring out cancer cells into the bloodstream that would become more active where they would normally be indolent, contained within the prostate.
Yeah. Yeah, that concept has been around for, golly, decades. I have not seen any studies showing that the process of doing the biopsy increases, malignant spread.
Mm.
So I understand the concept. You know, I certainly concede that it would be at least a theoretical possibility, but I haven't seen any evidence to support that it actually happens, at least not in a clinically significant percentage of cases. So, yeah, the track seeding is, like I said, it's something I've heard about since I was a resident back in the 1960s. But I can't help you with it in the real world. As far as, the rest of your comments, I don't know. The studies show that progesterone does alter the estrogen alpha receptors in the prostate at 127 different loci. So it's a very active compound on estrogen receptors in the prostate. And those estrogen alpha receptors are involved in trying to immortalize the cells of the prostate. And so the theory is that if you can keep your progesterone levels in a reasonable level for men instead of essentially non-existent by 60, you should be able to minimize the growth of the prostate and help prevent prostatic hypertrophy.
I mean, we also know, Jerry, that progesterone of all the three creams is the hardest to absorb through skin.
Yes.
And therefore, if he's applying it to genitals where it is very vascular, he's likely to get a higher value.
Yes, he is.
And he's likely to absorb it better.
Right. But my question is, what are your blood levels?
Yeah.
You know, and so, yes, what are your blood levels running for your progesterone? Because you're putting it on your genitals. The skin is very thin. It has a very good blood supply. You should absorb it very well. But, it's not what you put on the skin. It's what gets into your blood that counts. And that's what we're interested in.
I haven't measured the progesterone levels. But what I'm utilizing it for is more as a to decrease, which I don't have a high level of my PSA, so I'm using it in that respect.
Okay. But see, PSA...
So I use that as my marker. The PSA stays low. My PSA is 1.3, so...
Okay. But see, the PSA tells me how much active metabolic process is going on in your prostate. It doesn't tell me what your progesterone level is. But yeah, okay.
Yeah.
See, I check mine every time I get my blood work. I get both my PSA and my progesterone checked.
Right.
Because progesterone is kind of it's a double-edged sword, like most things in medicine. If your progesterone is in a good level, good blood level, you'll sleep well. You tolerate stress, you tolerate anxiety better, so it has a big impact in your brain.
Yeah.
It helps you to sleep better at night. It, at high levels, and why the reason I put on my face and skin is I like to be pretty. I feel pretty, I'm so pretty, I feel pretty and witty. Yeah. Because it makes your skin elastic and smooths out wrinkles, mm-hmm. and so you don't need so much Botox in your life. And so, you know, so I keep it on my face and neck for cosmetic reasons, in addition to the fact that it lets me sleep better at night, tolerate stress and anxiety, and helps keep my prostate from getting bigger.
Right. But you were also saying you get that too high.
But if you get it too high, it'll damp down your libido. Mm-hmm. And you'll suddenly find that your interest in sex goes away.
Right.
And so the trick is to keep a level that will give you the things you want.
Right.
And not trigger the things
you
don't want.
Side effects, right. Remember, it's a GABA mimetic, so it can cause depression. It can cause mood changes. It can cause feelings of sadness and lethargy. It can cause bloating and weight gain.
And can stimulate appetite, too.
And also cause constipation because it slows the bowel down.
Right. So, you know, like we're back to Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine. Anything strong enough to help yeah. is strong enough to hurt. There's a downside to every decision we make in medicine. Yeah. You know, you say, what is the level? It varies from individual to individual. I have had levels as high as 6 without getting overly moody.
I will forbid my doctors from doing that for men.
Most of the time, I try to keep mine between about 2 and 3.
Yeah. And so about 2 is where is our tolerance in the clinics.
Yeah.
Once they start getting higher, then, you know, we then have to kind of balance other things. And
that's
we
right.
do see the mood changes. Weight is an important issue. People find it very difficult to maintain their weight.
And progesterone can give you the munchies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so if you're finding an overwhelming urge to snack and you're finding you're gaining weight, then
for those people who like
high.
who like carbohydrates, particularly potatoes, there is this thing about French fries. They just taste delicious when your progesterone level is high and you crave them more. You should notice that next time you're at 6.
See, and every woman knows this because her progesterone peaks
yes.
about 2 weeks before her period.
Yes.
And then it plummets.
Yes.
And during that peak, they get the munchies, and then when it plummets, they get bitchy. So,
okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay,
all right,
thank
take
you,
care,
Tom.
Sir.
That opens up a line for you at 800-465-8770. It's Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. We'll return with Jesse in Tacoma. More questions about prostate health as Leading Edge Medicine continues in just a moment.
Living on love, buying on time. Without somebody, nothing ain't worth a dime. Just like an old-fashioned storybook.
Hey, before we get back to your calls at 800-465-8770, some other numbers we want to talk about, and that is booking your appointment for a free health analysis appointment at Longevity Medical Clinic. It includes 2 free tests. Tell us about those tests, one of you doctors.
Sure, would be happy to. But as I've been saying for the last many months now, those tests are just the tip of the iceberg. Don't come for those tests. Come for what comes after those tests.
Well, but the tests are an introduction.
Yeah, I know. We'll talk more about that off radio. But the tests are easy. The first is a blood test, and it tells us about your glycosylated hemoglobin, which basically tells us your risk for diabetes. And we're not just looking at diabetes risk. We're looking at what harm that extra sugar is doing to all of you, your brain, your eyes, your skin, your hair, your kidneys, your bones, your cancer risk, and inflammation markers. So that one value of whatever it is really a window into what else is going on in your body.
But, you know, for me,
yeah,
my big adage is if the brain don't work,
the rest don't matter. I know.
And if your A1C is under 5.2,
yeah,
you have half as many brain cells dying each year.
Correct.
As if it's at 5.7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and 5.7 is still within the normal range. It you're not is. Diabetic. Mm-hmm. So long before you become a diabetic, you double the rate at which you're losing brain volume.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a bad, you know, a bad sign. So,
exactly.
So that glycosylated hemoglobin as an indicator of how fast you're losing brain volume is an important one for me.
It really is. I mean, now, you know, we want you to live long and we want you to live healthy. And at 85, one in two will have dementia. And that's a huge deal. So if you want to prevent cognitive decline, which really begins very early, decades earlier than you get the diagnosis, then it is possible for you to initiate changes.
Right.
And then we are at the forefront of that. We want to prevent all of those changes for you. So that's one. And the second one is the in-body, where you stand on a machine and we look at muscle versus fat ratio. And that, again, is a marker of overall health and wellness and progression. Remember, loss of muscle mass is a given as we get older. So sarcopenia is a medical diagnosis, which means loss of muscle mass. And muscle, as we've been mentioning throughout this hour, is the key to health. Muscle is the currency of aging, as we say in our clinic. And if you want to age well and age healthy, you want to have healthy working muscle.
But also you want to get as little fat as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's that muscle to fat ratio
right.
that's important, because both muscle and fat need, people need to reimagine these. These are not cosmetic.
They are not.
Okay. I don't care about what the body fat looks like. It's the fact that that body fat is an active, destructive gland that is trying to kill your brain and your joints and your heart and your kidneys and your eyes, while working muscle is trying to heal and repair all that and actually help you to grow new brain cells.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, neither – we aren't interested in the way your muscle or your fat looks. What we're interested in is the fact that they are effectively two warring forces within your body. One of them trying to cripple and kill you, and the other trying to make you strong, fast, lean, smart, and sexy. And we need those two to shift the balance towards healing and repair as much as possible and decrease the destructive aspects.
That's right. And in your youth, your body did that for you naturally. But as you're getting older, your body's not capable of supporting those systems the way we want them supported. So we understand that, and we help the underlying physiology by boosting your hormonal, your nutritional, your foundational support to make tomorrow's better than today.
Right. And so if you come in, you give us your medical history, so we know what life has done to you up till that day. And you let us do these two tests. This will give us a good handle on your general risk factors. If you look like you're at high risk of bad things happening to you in the future, then they're going to offer you another set of tests. And the second set of tests you will pay for. The first ones were free. But if you need the full panel, that's about $600, $595, I
Correct.
Think, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So about $600. But that'll get you a 70-page or so printout that's going to look at things your family doctor has never looked at in his life. And it's going to give us a much more detailed profile of what's coming down the track at you in the future.
Right. Remember, normal is a bell-shaped curve, as Dr. Mixon has taught many, many times. And we want to not just see where you are in that bell-shaped curve, but we want to enhance you so that you're at optimal, not just normal.
Because normal's great when you're 18.
Yeah.
By 50, normal stinks.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets worse as you get older.
Mm-hmm.
So we aren't looking for normal. We're looking for the optimal. What is the best you could function? And so that bigger panel is going to give us a lot more detail about where you are in your aging process and what we need to do to optimize your aging.
Right.
Then we give you a choice. Do you want to continue sliding downhill and let the things happen that are happening, or do you want to address it? Let me give a little pitch here. Just the cost of this clinic, all in, our costs, the laboratory, the supplements you're likely to be on, the prescription drugs you're going to take, everything put together is about the same as the average car payment. About the same as the average person's car payment. And so I would think of it this way, because people say, well, I'm not sure I can afford it. Well, if you can afford an automobile, you can afford this. And it's a matter of priorities. Mm-hmm. Because which is more important to you, your car or your body? If your car is more important to you than your brain and your body, then get your car and slide downhill. If, on the other hand, your brain and body are more important to you than your car, then I'd suggest you come to Longevity Medical Clinic, drive an older car, and get a better body. Mm. But it's up to you. I'm not your daddy. I'm not your boss. I offer you help. But if you don't want it, you don't want it. And if you do want it, we're delighted to help.
Okay, call and make that appointment right now for those free tests. 866-86-YOUNG, 866-86-YOUNG, or you can also book them online at lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. Back with more of Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic, in just a few moments. Hang there.